Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Well, good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker, and I have my co-host, Shirley Carter.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us this evening for another Hot Topics.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here, Shirley. It was storming today here in South Florida, but we're pedaling through it all, and we can't have sunshine always in the Sunshine State. How's it there in Michigan?
Michigan, we had warmer weather today. I mean, it got chilly. We actually had snow Sunday. It was just flurry.
Snow
but,
Sunday?
You know, still. Yes, we did. We had snow. And it was storming. And it had really been storming for the last few days. And then today we had warmer weather. And it's supposed to be beautiful for the next 5 days.
Well, good. Speaking of the next 5 days, I know you have an event coming up the weekend, and you have a series of events coming up this year. So what's going on this weekend?
This weekend we have it's 17-year celebration of our anniversary, 17 years, and we're having our 8th Women of Vision Luncheon. And at this luncheon, we honor survivors. We're honoring the men and the women. So we have some prostate cancer and colon cancer as far as the men are concerned, and we have breast cancers. We have 20 survivors that we're honoring. We have a silent auction. We have vendors, giveaways. One of the things that we love to do at our event is that, you know, I like to do giveaways. I like to give back. So at least 35, 40 attendees will receive a free gift. And so it's a lot of fun because no one knows what all the bags are for and who all the bags are for, except for those that come year after year. But they know that over the year I collect different things, 40 giveaway bags. And the survivor bags, I make sure they have a very nice bag. And every year I do a special poem for them and frame it. So I, you know, research and find something that's really good and inspiring for them. And so their goodie bags, they're, you know, I had one to tell me, she said, I wait all year looking forward to my bag because I know you're going to put something there that's, you know, so unique and something that I will just treasure that it lifts me up and makes me feel more inspired. So that feels good to me that they're feeling good about what they receive, and as well as the speakers that I bring in. And I also bring in my jazz keyboardist, and I always have someone to do a very special song for the survivors.
And that's awesome. You know, our title tonight is Know Your Worth. And, you know, far too long we have so many individuals that are stumbling along in the dark because they have no idea who or whose they are. They just walk around feeding off of what other people's perspective of who they think they are, not really knowing why they do what they do. Now, your nonprofit Against All Odds, and you're doing this event. How did you arrive at this place, and how was it formulated? Because we have listeners that don't fully know your testimony of how you became to be who you are and the different legs and branches of who you are.
Wow. I think this is, you know, it's my purpose. I do know that. And because it's my passion as well as to help others. And I got here, it was the journey that I went through to get here. my life has pretty much been against the odds. When you look at the journey that I've been on and the path that I've gone through and the things I've gone through in life, my parents dying at a young age. I was 18. I became the mother of seven, my younger siblings, and a grandmother, too, because my youngest sister had a son already. She had the son 2 weeks after my mother's funeral. She delivered her son. So for the first 2 years of his life, I took care of him while she completed high school. And not to mention I had seven younger siblings at that time. So I became an instant mother at 18. And there were so many people saying, oh, you know, we need to split them up. It's too many kids for her to take care of. But I was determined that I would not allow them to split us up. And the courts did not come in and split us because I was able to, with the assistance of my couple older brothers, to maintain. And my father was still alive at the time, but he was so distraught over my mother's death because it was sudden. It wasn't like she had been sick. She had went to work, came home. She was getting ready to go shopping with me. And she developed a headache, and it was so excruciating that he had to take her to the emergency room, and she never came home. She ended up having an aneurysm. So it was a shock to us all. And then with my father's death, which was like 2 years later, he went to work and got off of work on his way to his car. He got hit by a drunk driver, and he was killed. So they were both very sudden. They were very young. My mother was 44 years old when she died. And my dad was 49. So it was young, two young, vibrant people, you know, that was suddenly gone and left all their children. So we said, you know, all of our lives have been against the odds because people didn't think we would make it. And then to fast forward in my life, I went through an issue of domestic violence with my first husband. I married him at a very young age and got out of that marriage only to marry someone else, and we got into drugs. I became homeless. I got out of that marriage and to marry someone else, which also dealt with some violence as well. And doing that marriage, less than 1 year into the marriage, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And then immediately the very next year, I was diagnosed again with breast cancer. Fast forward through all of that, I went through a divorce as a result of cancer and everything because he couldn't handle the back-to-back and everything I went through and the closing of my job and so on and so forth. And then I ended up on life support because all my vital organs started to shut down. Had no idea what was going on. Both lungs collapsed doing emergency surgery. Flatlined twice and ended up on life support. And had a stroke while I was in the hospital, lost my ability to walk, talk, and use my limbs. But I regained all of that, and only to find out that I had lupus. And then I had another disease that was in my lungs with the acronyms of BOOP, which is only found in full-blown AIDS patients and premature babies, none of which I was. So I ended up, they put my case study in the Boston Medical Book because it never had a case like mine. I ended up with eight different diagnoses before I left that hospital. I was in the hospital for 30 days. And the doctors had gotten to a certain point where they couldn't control it, the hemorrhaging in my lungs, fluid around my heart, my kidneys shutting down, my liver, my lungs. And they was like, there's nothing else we can do for it. Everything is shutting down. But I said, that's not what God said. And I told my children that. And I said, no matter what they say to you, God has got a plan for me. I started to turn around, and I started witnessing to patients. So they moved me out of one room to another room, and I witnessed to that patient, and they moved me again. So they kept moving my room, but every time they moved me, I had a new person to witness to about how good God is. To the point that my doctor said to me, I made her a new believer. She said, as a doctor, we sometimes forget that there is a God and he's in control. And she said, I have to tell you, everything we tried and everything we tried to do, nothing worked. It was only through God that it did. And because of my breast cancer and the chemo and all of that, after being on the life support and going through all of that, 2 years ago, I was on the list for a heart transplant because my right ventricle valve went down to 13.9% function. But they could not believe that I was walking, talking, walked 3 miles to the doctor's appointment. And he said, you're not winded. You're not out of breath. What makes you kick? I told him the only thing I know was God, that he had work for me to do. As a result, I'm still here. When he's done and when my job is over, then he will bring me home. But he said that work for me to do. So through my organization, I help others to reclaim their life after cancer. I told them cancer is not a death sentence. It's God's way of putting your life on pause for you to regroup to do his will and to live that purpose and plan that he has for your life. So if you're going through an illness and everything, once you accept that, then you know that it really is God's plan for your life. So that's
A lot of people go through situations in their life, and like you say, they feel, okay, life is over. It's a death sentence, so why even bother trying to do anything else because I'm done? And, you know, that's why you have to know your worth and know that your life has value. It's significant as you may feel. Feel sometime. There's somebody that has need of you. There's somebody counting on you. You know, you can pass somebody in a store and change somebody's whole disposition about themselves. They'll walk in a dark room and just seeing you smile or seeing you say hello, queen, or hello, king, this lightens, just changes their whole perspective. Mm-hmm. I always tell individuals at my church, I said, you know, love isn't love until you give it away. You know, it's no sense in saying you love and you have love and you're never giving it away to anybody. Love is giving, love is kind, love is pure. And what it does is it resurrects individuals to come into alliance of who they are in their, not only with their mind, but with their spirit. And what that does is ignite a flame for individuals to do just like what you're doing. A foundation called Against All Odds, a nonprofit where you're giving to the community and you're serving those who went through trauma with cancer as you have done. And so that just brings me back to the fact that we've got to know our value and not just give up because of somebody's diagnosis of us. Now, when you were going through all this processes and you said you started, what was that defining moment where you wanted to just say, I want to do this, I want to start this nonprofit? Because I know with me going through domestic violence, I didn't just say out of a sudden, oh, I just want to do this and get back. It was a process. So what was that process like for you?
Oh, that process was, you know, when I went through, because I went through in 95 and 96, and I didn't start it until 99. I became so frustrated with the lack of, and I use that word broad, the lack of support in my marriage, the lack of support in the community, the fact that my job closed out on me when, you know, I was out taking treatment. And the lack of support even in my church at the time. It was like the only support I had was my children. Because even my immediate family, my sister, my brother, they didn't get it. It was like a void there. It was almost like I had something, but if they would get too close to me, something bad may happen to them. Mm-hmm. So instead of embracing me, there was a disconnect. Even with my in-laws, they didn't really, when they shared what was going on with me or that I was sick, they would never verbally say, she's got breast cancer. You would hear such statements as, pray for her, she's going through. And no one bothered to say, going through what? What's going on with it? And it took me years later to find out that people was like, all I was told to pray for you, you was going through. That God is dealing with her. Okay, they never, you know, and I had people that are still shocked to find out that I knew back then or knew me and my family and my in-laws, but never knew that I was going through breast cancer. All they knew when they were told to pray for me, God is dealing with me. So it was almost like they felt like God was punishing me for something. And they couldn't be a part of that. So that loneliness and that void and that, you know, was a hurt to me and my children. Because my children began to feel like, why no one loves us? Why no one wants to be around us? And they were young, except for my oldest son. But my two younger sons was in the house with me. So then I had a girlfriend say to me, well, why don't you do something about it? Because even after I went through all of that and I was dealing with some heart issues and stuff, and I said, it is so hard that I'm not even getting support from my church, from family, in-laws. And she said, why don't you do something about it? And I said, what do you mean? She said, you know what you're feeling. How many other people you think feels like that have gone through, and especially African-American women? What is there really here for them? And I said, I really didn't feel the embrace of the Coleman. The Cancer Society gave me information, but there was no one there for me to really feel connected to. I tried going to some of the other meetings and everything. 90% of the women did not look like me. In most cases, none of them did, some of the meetings that I went to. And I felt like, I know I'm not the only one in this county, in this state, that has this. But I felt like I was alone. So that's how Against All Odds came about. Against All Odds is for, I started it for African-American women and their families, because breast cancer affects the whole family. So what I started doing was providing information and being that support, that Leah Dunn, that advocate for other African-American women when they received that diagnosis, to be there with them to help break down some of the medical terminology that the doctors and nurses were using with them, or remind them, said, can you put it in layman's terms? She needs to understand what you're saying. Or when her mind goes wandering when you're talking to her, then I'm that person that relays to her, your doctor said this, this, and this. And I take notes during the appointment. So I myself don't forget that I can give it to them, relay the information to them. And then I started having meetings, but my meetings consist of more than just of the survivor. It consisted of the spouse or the significant other and the children. And my children embrace those children by talking with them and say, I understand, my mom went through. And you should see a child's face when they can actually talk to someone their age or one of their peers that knows what they may be feeling and that can give them some type of comfort and knowing, I understand, I've been in your shoes. That means so much to a child. So that's how Against All Odds got started. It wasn't like, oh, all of a sudden I said, oh, I'm going to try this. No, it took years for me to get to that point and know that this is what God wanted me to do. Because even my sister said to me that had she been diagnosed with cancer, breast cancer, she said, I wouldn't have told no one, and I definitely wouldn't have been doing any treatment and certainly not having my breast removed. And I said, then I know you confirm that out of the two of us, God chose me. Because I asked, and I tell people, be careful what you ask for. Let me be your instrument. And I asked him to deliver me from drugs. And I said, if you do, I will be your instrument and I will serve you to the day I die. So whatever your will for my life is, let it be. And those are some very, you have to be very, very careful about putting that on the line because you take on that job and because you call yourself a spoiled child of God, which I do, that doesn't mean that everything is easy for you. That means that you got work to do. And there are going to be some days where you're going to be prostrate on that floor, crying your eyes out, or sitting in that corner, crying your eyes out. But know that who's got your back and that he will bring you through it. And every time you come through, you're a stronger person. And sometimes I look back and say, I don't know how I do some of the stuff I do, but I know who does. So I'm just, something that, you know, people say, you make it look so easy. It's not easy, but then again, it's not hard either. When you know how to conform and let his will be done. And you learn that fact that it may be rough and you may be crying in the night, but that saying about joy come in the morning, it really does. It really does.
Yeah, so surely.
And I'm not.
So surely, yeah. Really, a lot of people that are tuned in and listening to you talking about your beginnings and how you arrived at this point you've arrived at, one of the things you said was that you asked God if he would deliver you from this and this, that you would do this. And I can imagine there's individuals listening in that are tuned in tonight that have been in that position where they've put that fleece out, if you will, and found themselves in a certain place and situation, and things didn't work out for some reason, and then they decided, well, since you didn't move and do what I asked you to do, God, I guess it's not your will for me to do this and so. So, therefore, my life doesn't matter. It doesn't have value. But those of you that are tuning in and have been in that place and had that feeling, press one, and we'll bring you into the conversation because success leaves clues. All of us didn't just show up and arrive here at this place. There was a process. We've been through something, and it has caused us to be who we are. And truth of the matter is everybody's been somewhere, and it's cost everybody a price to be who they are, rather good, bad, or indifferent. You've paid a price to be who you are. But at the end of the day, that price determined and showed you what your worth was and encouraged you so you can inspire and motivate other individuals to tap into that next level of greatness. Because we're all created to be great, but greatness is a choice. I don't care what type of disabilities you have. there was a purpose for you. Even if you, a nurse coming by the bed, like you said, Shirley, you testified, if somebody came in, it gave you another opportunity to witness to somebody, to tell them about God's goodness and his grace, and then inspire them to do what they do and do it with a smile on their face. You never know, just saying one kind word to an individual will transform their whole entire life, and by your action touching somebody else, it can spiral into millions of individuals. Just one simple act of obedience and knowing who you are and validating who you are by going out, reaching, touching somebody else will help others get to that next level of greatness.
Yes.
So this event that you have coming up this weekend, when is it and what time is it and what's the cost and how can they register?
It's Saturday the 21st, and the time is 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's at MSU Kellogg Center in their Big Ten room. And you can get tickets. You can register online at Eventbrite.com, and it's the 8th Women of Vision Luncheon. Or you could just Google it, the 8th Women of Vision Luncheon, and it'll come up showing East Lansing, and Eventbrite will show it. And there's a few sites that have it up, and tickets are available. Tickets are $35. And I think we have maybe one or two breast cancer survivor tickets available. And those are free for a survivor, is either breast cancer or prostate or colon, any type of cancer. I think there's maybe two tickets left, one or two. So it will be taking place this Saturday, like I said, MSU Kellogg Center in the Big Ten room. So we're excited about it. And it's just a blessing to be able to do it. And I've had people say, how do you always get the Big Ten room? When you have favor, that it's not a question of how. It's, you know, you just say thank you and you take the room. So that's
I know a lot of people aren't that tuned in, aren't in Michigan, but they follow you on Facebook and they have friends and family members that are in the Michigan area that can attend. So I encourage you to reach out to Shirley Carter on Facebook. And if you have a cancer survivor, whether it be male or female, that can benefit from this opportunity of going to the event this weekend, contact her and they can come to the event and be motivated and inspired.
Yeah,
call
and one of the things we
ask. Okay. We have a listener and call us 7570. You're live.
Oh yes, I'm sorry. I expected the whole phone number. You know. Hi, I'm Ray Broussard.
Hello.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, I just wanted to say something because I think everybody has obstacles, and sometimes I feel like I'm the only one, but thank God I haven't had cancer. But I was in an emotionally abusive marriage for 40 years, raised four children, who I know that emotional abuse is learned and generational. And I'm still receiving emotional abuse from four of my children and a granddaughter. And, you know, my mother always said, when you're down, don't let anybody know you're down because they'll put you down further. And that is the truth. Now, if you're sick, how can you not let anybody know? Because I developed from the stress, I developed rheumatoid arthritis, clogged arteries, and I had a stroke, which, thank God, left me able to speak and see. But I can't drive because Texas won't let me drive because I don't see anything on the left. And they don't want me to play bumper cars. So, but other than that, I'm very blessed. I can see reasonably well. My hearing is very good, and I can move. Now, after I had the stroke, I wound up with viral meningitis, and I almost died. And then I was just getting my strength back, and I was walking around 2 years ago, and I fell at my son's in-laws, and I tore a meniscus in my left knee and some vertebrae in my back. So now I'm wheelchair-bound, and I told him today, there ain't no way I'm going to stay in that wheelchair because I'm going to be a speaker, and I want to be one of Les Brown's platinum speakers. That's my goal.
Awesome.
These obstacles are going to get out of my way.
Well, the show tonight is Knowing Your Worth, so that means that in spite of all your obstacles, you know that your life has value and it has meaning, and you wanting to be a motivational speaker, meaning you want to inspire and encourage others to tap into their greatest being.
Yes, and I did volunteer speaking, and I did get paid for a few speeches years ago when I was back in Houston, the greatest city in Texas, I think. But now I'm stuck in the North Texas area. And I don't know. All these kids that live here, my four kids, I have one daughter-in-law who visits me. But the rest of them, I'm just lonely, you know? Nobody comes by. All my friends and everything, my church friends, everybody's in Houston, except my family, and nobody comes to visit me except one daughter-in-law and her two sons. So we get
Well, we're going to pray that you, you get visitors coming in and will encourage you and motivate you to keep doing what you're going to do. Thank you so much for tuning in. So Shirley, she's almost got a story like you, different obstacles and fighting and pressing her way against all odds.
And what I want to, and I know she can still hear us, and one of the things I want to encourage her to do is don't sit and wait for someone to come visit you, because you have a story to tell. And if you can get out and about, and I know you said you're in a wheelchair and they don't want you to drive. I'm not sure if you're living alone or if you live in an apartment building or what your situation is as far as that. But they have different types of transportation in a lot of the states that you can get some transportation. And, you know, if you have a phone, make some phone calls, and then you can go and visit people. You can go to nursing homes. You can go to community centers. Then make yourself the social butterfly that you go start visiting people. Instead of waiting for someone to come see you, you take that energy and that love that you have and you spread it and make someone else's day. And then that'll make your day richer.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, you were going to say before, Rachel.
Before she, I just wanted to say that with whatever our listeners, I just want to encourage them to learn what your value is as far as what is your purpose, and know that everyone on this earth has a purpose. And don't worry about someone else's. Don't worry about what they're doing and how they're living and how they're achieving different things. See, a lot of us miss out by watching someone else. We miss our purpose. We miss our blessings because we don't look in our own basket and see what we have. We're looking at the next person's basket, that person over here, and or we're starting to wonder why we don't have certain things. How did this person get this? And how did that person move here or go there or do that? and not look at our own goodies in our own basket, when we start to do that more often, looking at our own and start sharing. When I say sharing, that doesn't necessarily mean that you got to give something tangible. A smile to a stranger. I had that experience in Chicago. Two experiences I would never forget. One was I was coming out of a store, and I smiled at the gentleman that was going in. And the man stopped me, and he said, "Your smile just saved my life." And it gave me chills. And I'm like, well, he's just going into a store. He said he was going in the store to make his final purchase, but he was going to end his life. He said, "Why did you smile at me?" I just felt like, just smile. I didn't even, you know, it wasn't that I was attracted to him or anything like that. I just smiled. I didn't even say a word to him. I just smiled. But he stopped me and told me that. And then there was another gentleman. He was sitting outside of a restaurant. And he was homeless. And he was asking, "Do you have any spare change?" And I was compelled to ask him, "When was the last time you ate?" And he said, "I'm trying to get some change together to eat now." I was there with my cousin, and I had my two sons with me, and she had her son, youngest son, with her. I invited him into the restaurant, and I called the waiter over, and I said, and he didn't sit with us. He sits separately. And I said, "Let him order whatever he wants off this menu." And I got his bill. She said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Whatever." She said, "What if he ordered two or three things?" "I don't care. Whatever he wants, give it to him." And I got the bill. The manager came out, because I guess she went back and told him, "This lady is going to, the guy that sits out there all the time, she's buying him whatever he wants off the menu." The manager came out and stepped to me, and he said, "No one has ever done that for him." He said, "This guy's been sitting here for years." And he said, "You know what? Whatever he wants, I'm going to pay half of his bill." So we both walked over to the guy at his table and said, "Whatever you want." And he said, "I really would like to have a steak. I have not had a steak in 10 years. I said, "Give him the best steak you have." And he ordered a steak. And he sat there and enjoyed his meal. But the look on his face and the fact that he sat there almost cried over a steak, and I said, things that we take for granted. That somebody would be that emotional over having a steak. That touched me, and I will never forget that. And that's been over 15 years ago. But it really touched me when he did that. So that's why I say you never know when you can make someone's day by the simplest things. A smile, a meal, so often that we take for granted. Know your worth and know that you are worthy, even if you don't have what someone else has. Know that
well,
you
one
are
of the things you
purpose.
Did was you brought someone back into reality to let them know that they were significant by that act of kindness. And that's what we have to do as individuals, is not only remind ourselves about who we are, but implement in other individuals' lives that they have value, their life is significant. But one of the reasons why individuals aren't functioning and living their best life is because they're focusing so much on how they're going to get to the next level. How are they going to make it because they don't have money? How are they going to be recognized in different arenas and get that job because they don't have the education or they don't have the money or the resources to look the part. That is one of the greatest deceptions of that boogeyman, that inner demon inside that tells you you can't, you won't ever be successful, you won't ever get to the next level, because it keeps you focusing on the how. But in order to shift and cause that paradigm shift in your mind, you have to focus on why it's important for you to do it. Because, see, once you realize why you have to do what you do, then the rest is going to be easy, because that's going to be your fuel that gets that engine running and gets you from A to B, that fuel of why inside. When I started doing what I did, I didn't have any money at all. I didn't even have a thought of how I was going to do anything. Only thing I knew was why I needed to do it. I needed to get up out of feeling sorry for myself. I needed to get up from doing nothing because I had people depending on me, which were my four children. I had all the little four eyes looking at me saying, "Mommy, what's next?" That was my fuel. Yes. That's what got me to the next level, because I knew that they were counting on me, because I promised them that if they did what they had to do, trust me to be their mother, that we wouldn't live like we were living. We didn't have to be homeless. We didn't have to drive a raggedy car and go to the thrift store shopping. And so nothing wrong going to the thrift store, because I'll visit them occasionally now. But that, yes. I had to do what I had to do. But the point I'm trying to make is that if you sit waiting for the right opportunity, there's never ever going to be a right opportunity. Sometimes you just have to leap and grow wings on the way down and start flapping. Sometimes you're going to fall, but you just get right back up again and keep focusing on why you have to do it. Why you have to do it is because it's part of your destiny. Why do you have to do it? Because it's part of the purpose and the plan of God. Why you have to do it is because somebody's depending on you. Do you know that there are people depending on you that you don't know are depending on you because you haven't met them yet? That's so awesome and so liberating for a lot of individuals, is because if you continue on that path that is called assignment and purpose, that there are going to be people that you've never, ever dreamed of meeting, that you've never dreamed of connecting with, that will in turn take you to a whole new level. Because why? You would have been in your zone. You would have been in your purpose. You would have be in that will, that ultimate will and plan of God for your life, which is rewarding and enriching, and you can't put a price tag on it. You can't buy it. People say, money makes me happy, but money don't make you happy. There's a lot of people that are millionaires and billionaires that take their life every day. And they have why would they take their life? They got all this money. They got the cars. They got the houses. They can have any female, any male they wanted. They got all this jewelry. Why would they take their life? Because they couldn't buy happiness. That's the only peace within. Living your ultimate purpose is the most satisfying and rewarding and enriching place that you can be on this planet. And don't focus on how you're going to get it. Just focus on why you have to get it done. Because there will be people that will come in your circle once you start walking on that path of fulfillment and purpose. There are going to be people that are assigned to help you along the way. But they can't help you if you don't get on the way.
That is so, so true.
So, it's like on your journey, Shirley, of against all odds, there were people that were helping you on your way. Those people that came to you helped you stay alive, helped you believe. They actually helped you into your purpose. They started paving that path for you to be who you are. And Ray, if you're still tuning in listening, who you are is not who you're going to be tomorrow or the day after that or the day after that, because every time you take a step towards your purpose, which is your goal in life, it actually adds riches financial, spiritually, emotionally, mental riches that you cannot buy. It's the most rewarding experience and feelings. I mean, I'm talking about it because I'm feeling it. I've lived it. I've done it. And yet there's still more for me to do. I never thought I would be on a radio show. I've been doing radio for almost 8 years. I never thought this was part of the plan, but it was part of God's plan for my life. I never thought I would have written a book. I've written 4 books that I never fathomed for myself. I've traveled the world. I'm afraid to get on planes. I don't get on there unless I absolutely have to. But it was part of the plan. It is the, and I get on and I do everything I do. I get on that stage. I get on the radio. I do ministry. I have my foundation from the soul of a woman. I do all this because it's part of my why I have to do it. Why? Because there's people counting on me. Why? Because it's not about me. Why? It's about what God wants to do through me. Why? It's because I want to get to the next level. And when I get to the end of my road, which is the end of my life, I don't want anything undone. I want to live my life full now and die empty. And you can't do that if you're constantly thinking about how I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
How is really, you know, none of your business. Don't worry about the how. Just focus on why. Why you got to get out of that bed every morning. Why you got to walk out of that door. Why you got to go to that job. Why you got to start that business. Why you got to reach out to someone you don't like. Because, you know, sometimes those people you don't like hold the key to your next level.
Yes.
Your why. Yes. Why you have to do it. You have to do things that are uncomfortable, but it's part of your why. It pulls away layers of stripping you down to being that authentic you.
Yes, it
God
does.
God can use you better when you're stripped away with all that pride and anger and all that built-up anxiety. When you're peeled away like a banana, then out of that is a light shining bright that can be used. And just think about the rewards of fulfillment of doing what you need to do and have to do in life. Call a 2175. You are alive.
Really good. I'm really learning. I'm Marie. And Shirley, I take my hat off to you. I tell you, it's just been wonderful just to hear that, because I too was on the street, and also I had a home that was paid for and a brand new car that was paid for, and didn't even have sense enough to even live in it. But I tell you, I just thank God where I am today, and the lady that's spirit chair. I'm 63 years old, and I've been like this since 2008. That's where that they don't even know why I cannot walk. I walk with a walker. And I tell you that it doesn't matter how it is and why it is, because long suffering is in the Bible. So some of us got to, you know, some of us got to just feel that, you know, and we have to just accept, you know, who we are and what we are, because no matter what, we still have life. And I speak life. And, you know, and the Bible says we have life more abundantly, and we have life eternal. So as long as we speak life, you know, we will have life. But I tell you, it's been a long journey for me also, you know. And Shirley, most of your journey, I tell you, I can agree with it, you know. And like my niece, I introduced you to my niece, and she died, you know, with cancer. And it was because she didn't have the love, and I felt that. I felt that. And no one was really loving her up there. And I asked my brother, you know, why don't you go up there, and why don't y'all just, you know, go and just, you know, love her, you know, just love on her, you know. And they was like it was, they were scared of her, you know, because of the way, you know, she was deteriorating, you know. And it's just so, you know, it, you know, when you don't have your family, like I'm down here in Florida, my family's in Georgia, and I just left Georgia with my granddaughter graduating, and I was there with my family. And I tell you, you just don't know how your personality, your life, your everything just change, you know, when you're with family and they're loving on you and they're helping you and they're doing these things for you. And then as soon as I come back home, I come back home to lonely, you know, because most of my family don't like down here. So, you know, it's hard for them to try to live down here. And it's hard for them to understand it. It's hard for me to live in the cold. So I just thank God for you all tonight, and I thank you for the purpose of you all life. And I know that everybody that's listening got something out of this because it's very, very good and touching. Thank you so much, Dr. Val and Shirley, for letting me share that, and I appreciate you all so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in and being a faithful listener. Yes, it is. You know, that's why one of the reasons I wanted you to share more about what it is you're doing there in Michigan and outside of Michigan, because there's resources out there. And one of the reasons I started my nonprofit was because I was upset over the fact that when I found myself homeless with me and my four children, I couldn't go nowhere. I felt trapped. And the nonprofits that were out there, you had to go through so much just to even see somebody. You in trouble now, and they're giving you an appointment for 2 weeks later. I mean, I needed help now, today.
That's so true.
You know, I understand there's systems in place, but sometimes you need a better system. When somebody has emergency situations going, you can't give them. Just like I remember Shirley last year when I needed a tooth pull, and I didn't have the money to go to the dentist, and because when I called and I said, well, I don't have insurance, and they told me how much it was going to cost. It was like $1,200 to pull a tooth. I'm like, really? Are you serious? So I went and tried to find different organizations and stuff, and even tried to go through social services to get my tooth pulled. They gave me an appointment for 3 months later to see about pulling a tooth that was, I mean, excruciating pain every day. 3 months later. And that's how it is when individuals are going through situations in their life where they need help right away. And although we have thousands upon thousands of nonprofit and for-profit organizations that are to serve and aid the community, the help, immediate help isn't there. The paperwork is so piled up, and they don't have the resources or the people to see the people because there's so much.
I know, and it has gotten to the point that you're no longer, they are gone beyond the fact that looking at you as an individual, as a human being. It is like we're all numbers. Take a number. Or you don't fall in this number. You got to fall in this category. And most categories are numbers. If you don't fall in there, you could be a dollar over, then you don't qualify. Instead of looking at, wait a minute, it's only a dollar. And this person really is in need. Like you're in pain, and they tell you to wait 3 months. Who does that? That's how our society is guiding now. And that's why organization like ours is needed, but the funding, we need to get funding to help keep us afloat and everything so we can continue. Because, you know, with you, I look at you, what you do all the time with the children and the families. You do the back to school. You got several different programs that you do yourself with domestic violence. And my question to you, besides that point of being that motivating factor for you, what made you decide to stay in Florida with it? Was it because that's where it started with you, or did you ever think about leaving Florida to do it?
Well, I wanted to do it here because that's where I felt the need was. It was very hard. I mean, me and my children were homeless for 3 months. And it was not an easy road for me to travel, but I made it work where I was, being that I was here. So the things I do the back to school because I had four kids. They were between the ages of 8 and 14. And when it came time to go back to school, the teachers had these lists of things that the kids had to have. So that's why I give out school supplies, because when you have more than one child, even when one child is difficult with the list that they send home. So I tried to ease the burden, and myself and Eula Murray, that has the Today Project, we've joined forces, and every year we've given out school supplies. We've given out as much as 350 kids a year. Then we were doing the Christmas giveaways. So the last 2 years we used to do toy drives, but I didn't want to do toy drives anymore because most of the families and kids we work with, they grew older, and the toys that we were getting were for little babies. So the last couple of years I've been doing gift cards, giving them to the families so that the kids will have the opportunity of going to the store, getting what they need, because a lot of times they don't need toys or electronics. They need clothes, sneakers, shoes, stuff like that. And then those that need emergency help getting out of one apartment into another, that I assist with that, because that's one of the things that I had issues with. I didn't have first, last, and security to move into a place. So I set up the foundation based on the needs that I ran into when I found myself, you know, homeless and in a divorce and a domestic violence situation. So, you know, one of the things you said is absolutely right. The funding is not there. If I didn't have personal friends that would sponsor some of the things I did, and plus by me speaking and my books, I couldn't do it, because the masses only support the larger nonprofit organizations. They don't look at the grassroots organizations that are working in the community. They rather give their monies there. Well, you can still get a tax write-off giving to the Soul of a Woman, just like you can Against All Odds. So it's always a constant battle doing this, but I do it because, you know, I know the why I have to do it. Not worrying about the how. I focus on the why, because I believe that everyone is significant, everyone is valuable, and everyone has purpose. And if I can be a hand in that by touching somebody, reaching a heart, and empowering a life, that's what I'm going to do. And we're always out of time on Hot Topics from the Soul, but those of you that are in the California area or can travel to L.A. next weekend, the 27th and 28th, Les Brown is doing his two-day I Have to Speak training, so you can find out more information about that by calling 954-724-0900 and saying you heard it on Hot Topics from the Soul, and you'll be able to get a discount on the registration. www.eventsbyrise.com. If you have a computer, you can go online and look it up for that. Shirley, it's always been a pleasure. I wish you well on your event. And those of you that are in the area, please drop by and support Against All Odds. Good night, and God bless.
Good night.